It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 116 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I've got a fun interview with Joshua Fialkoff, writer of such great things including Skyman No. 1, recently released from Dark Horse, and The Bunker, a book that's coming out from Oni Press. He also does work for Marvel, including working on The Ultimates, so he's a name you should be familiar with. We talk about how Skyman came to be in The Bunker and other things. It's a great interview, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy listening. Then everything wraps up with a couple of items of news I think you should be aware of. We've got a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. To the podcast, Joshua Fialkoff, creator of Skyman and The Bunker, among other good things. How are you doing today, Joshua?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. It's good to talk with you. I did want to mention that you have done some great things that I've enjoyed over the last several years, including like Tumor, which you got an Eisner Award for.
I got an Eisner nomination. I wish I got
that. Oh, is that a nomination?
Award was stolen from my hands by Jim McCann and Janet Leigh's Return of the Dapper Men. Jim is a good friend of mine, but I will never forgive him for this horrible affront to our friendship. Like, does he not know that my ego needs fed?
Okay, and then you have also done, well, you won the pilot season comics first award with Psyblade.
I did. I actually worked for Top Cow off and on for a few years. I did a bunch of stuff, and I won their very first pilot season contest, and I think we got like 1.5 million votes.
Wow.
Which sadly, we did not get 1.5 million sales. So I think that would have been, that's a shame.
Nuts. How's that?
I think it was, you know, you have people who are just fans of those characters and they went crazy and they spent a month voting, you know, over and over and over.
Okay. But the thing I know you best for was recently when DC started the New 52, you were writing I, Vampire, which I thought was a terrific vampire story. I loved it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm immensely proud of the work that, you know, that Andrea and I did, and Marcello and all the guys on it. We worked our butts off, and that book was a challenge to do a book that odd at DC for the New 52. So I'm immensely proud. It means a lot to me and the people that it meant so much to people, because it didn't sell great, you know, like it sold sort of consistently though. So everyone who read it really liked it, I think.
It was great. From the start, I read it all the way through. So it was wonderful. I really enjoyed it. Now, you also have written Doctor Who, interestingly enough. Are you a big Whovian?
I've been watching it since I was like 4 years old, probably. I have a brother who's 9 years older than me. And I remember being a kid, and he would watch the Tom Baker serials on TBS.
Oh.
And I would sit there with him and be confused by it all. and I specifically remember watching the second Doctor's story. It's the episode. The Patrick Troughton episode. I can't believe I can't remember the name of the episode. It's all gone. I'm gonna do it. No, it's gonna be good. Hold on, I got it. I can do it. What is the name of the episode?
I'll tell you what.
I'm gonna do it. Don't you? The Mind Robber. I'm so stupid. The Mind Robber, which is one of the best science fiction stories ever. But there's a scene early on in the first episode where Zoe, who is his mod future girl assistant, climbs on the console as they spiral into another universe. And I actually specifically remember realizing how much I liked girls. Just seeing her in a miniskirt, I was like, oh, I don't like that. I don't, like 9 years old. And I was like, that is for me. That's what I'm So I owe a lot to Doctor Who. I owe a lot.
Yeah. I'll say, wow, I haven't, not many people that are fans of Doctor Who tell me stories like that.
So their sexual, about their strange sexual awakenings to old Patrick. Yeah. Patrick. No, you know, it's actually funny because I'll talk, like people who are fans of the old show, I will talk about it. And that happened, uh-huh. And I'll bring up that moment, and everyone's like, oh, I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly. People, you have to be the right, you have to have been the right age when you saw it. But, you know, I think there's an entire nation of you know, guys in their 50s or 60s in England who all have the exact same feeling.
That is hilarious.
All right, well, I want to get to your present work, and let's start off with good old Skyman, which I had the chance to write a preview of for firstcomicsnews.com. And I really love the book, I have to tell you. You know, I also like very much Captain Midnight, which the other Joshua, Mr. Williamson, is doing. And I know you guys are great friends. Do you want to talk a little bit about how Skyman came to be?
Yeah, I mean, it was it came out of obviously it spins out of Captain Midnight, and Josh and I talk all the time, and we've talked about, you know, what he was doing on the book, and we kind of gone back and forth about stuff. And I think at the same time, I haven't done a book at Dark Horse in a long, long time. And it was just sort of, I've been, you know, talking to them about finding the right thing, and it all kind of just came together. And so it's great because Josh and I talk, so like we talk daily. So, you know, as we were working on the stories, we got to really, you know, compliment each other, and, you know, what he sets up in his book pays off in mine. And, you know, at the end of the miniseries, at the end of the Skyman miniseries, what we create and what kind of comes out of that is going to feed into what's going on in the rest of the universe, mm-hmm. which is one of the, you know, it's one of the nice things about what Dark Horse is doing, like having a smaller universe. And I'm really lucky because, you know, I'm working on Ultimates. Mm-hmm. I've been working on Ultimates over at Marvel, and it's sort of the mm-hmm. same thing where it's nice because it's a shared universe, but it's very small. Mm-hmm. You know, so like we have kind of a wide berth to do what you want because you're not coordinating with 40 people. You're coordinating with four people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm friends with Fred Van Lente as well. So like it's, you know, all the, you know, we all talk to each other and we all kind of share ideas and find ways to make our stories, you know, make each other's stories look better.
Mm-hmm. Now, my understanding is you're a fan of the Golden Age heroes.
Yeah, I'm a big Golden Age comics nerd. I the original Golden Age Sandman, one of my favorite comics of all time. I like the Matt Wagner, Sandman Mystery Theater stuff is great. Mm-hmm. But if you read those comics, even though they're from the 40s, just as modern, just as smart, like they're great pulp stories that still work and still hold up, which is actually, mm-hmm. even as a fan of Golden Age stories, like that's not something that's usually true, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, Skyman was a Golden Age hero, and now you're bringing him back, just like Midnight was a Golden Age hero. Skyman existed in the past as well, a different costume, different storyline about that. And the thing I love about the book so much is you're taking two untouchable subjects on at the same time. You're talking about racism, and you're talking about disability. And I think that, gosh, I can't wait to see what you're going to do with it. I wish this wasn't just a mini series. I wish it was an ongoing comic because I could just, I'm convinced you could tell stories for years with these guys. Well, yeah, so I just think it's great.
And, you know, and it's something that, I look at comics and it almost came out of, you know, the joke of it is, you know, like in the first issue, one of the things they deal with is after the first Skyman, after the current Skyman who we met in Captain Midnight humiliates the government and exposes this secret organization, you know, they go to get the next guy in line. Mm-hmm. And the next guy in line looks exactly like him because that's how superhero comics are. You know, mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. there's the old joke that if you take off, you know, most of the male Avengers masks, you can't tell which one is which. Because they're all white guys with blonde hair. And if you take off, you know, if you take off, like, what's the best of the Batman-Superman crossovers are the ones where Batman pretends to be Superman and nobody can tell the difference. They look exactly the same. You know, so like, that joke was something, like, it's something that I've always kind of thought about and always wondered about. And then I'm like, overly conscious of, you know, the lack of diversity in comics, you know, and it's something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even in my creator-owned work, like I try to have as diverse a cast as I possibly can, you know, and so doing this book, you know, that was the very first thing that came to me was like, if there's a program that's been 50 years of breeding the same guys over and over and you have mm-hmm. to reface it, what do you do? And the idea of like, well, you just get a black guy. Get a black guy in there. And the simple offensiveness of that mindset, but that's exactly how PR looks at things. Like that's exactly the mindset of like, well, we just change the color and we're fine. And to do a story that's about that idea, and that a guy who realizes like, well, they pick me because of the color of my skin, not because of the content of my character. Mm-hmm. And having him realize that the content of his character, you know, far exceeds the men who have worn the costume before him, mm-hmm. is such a kind of, it's a nice story to tell, and it's so much fun to do.
Yeah, there's two things that that brings to mind. The subtitle of the comic is they tried to make a perfect weapon, but they got a hero instead. And I thought that's a wonderful line. I think that is so descriptive of what the comic's all about, right to the core. I like that very much. But the other thing, which goes back to the comments we were talking about racism before, I loved it when one of the government leaders says they were looking for somebody a little less likely to hang out at a Ku Klux Klan rally. I thought that was a great line. I sat there, I laughed right out loud when I saw that, and that's such a great commentary on how comics have been so far. Going to this whole business about race, I don't understand why it is in comics there's such a struggle to have diversity in there. You know, I get a little unhappy.
It's self-perpetuating. You know, when the bulk of the characters you're reading about are Caucasian, you know, are white, you know, rich guys, because that's really what 90% of comics is the stories of white rich people. You're cutting out part of your audience. And then, you know, and then the self-fulfilling part becomes like, well, then they'll do, you know, whether you have like the Milestone characters or Jon Stewart or whoever, like when you create an African-American character, and then because they don't do outreach and because they don't actually spread their arms out into the world, mm-hmm. people of color don't know they exist.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, there's an audience out there. And I think the best proof of that is what, you know, Brian Bendis has done with Miles Morales and the Ultimate Universe. You know, like that's, like, it's funny because I have nothing to do with any of that stuff other than, you know, I went under the Miles Morales stuff. But working around that and the importance of that character and just doing, you know, doing signings, sitting next to Brian and seeing that there's a huge audience a huge diverse audience of people who are looking for characters that they can look up to, who they can share with their kids. It, you know, it's something that it's always kind of at the forefront of my mind, and it's something that, you know, I make an effort to do. And, you know, I guess it's actually greedy on my part, because it's like, look, there's people out there. There are readers who are interested in this. Like, let's do that. Let's give them something that they can't get.
Yeah. A lot of the stores that I go to, the majority of people, and I'm not trying to be racist or anything, but the majority of people who are buying the comics are African-Americans, black. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on, but, you know, I don't understand why we have to take a person of color and put them into Spider-Man's outfit. And on some levels, you're doing that with Skyman a little bit. But on the other hand, if we don't know much about Skyman, that's actually a good thing, because we haven't really gotten married to the character people today have. So this is a great chance to introduce a black character who's a hero in his own right and does things. And so I'm so happy when I saw that he was going to be a black character. I was thrilled. I said, oh, yes, here's a chance for a minority character to take off and shine, you know, which is so hard to do these days. I don't understand why, you know, characters who are, you know, different, like Asian Americans and all other things, I don't understand why their books don't sell. I just don't get that. So I'm thrilled that you're getting the chance to start off and go in a different direction and make this something that I hope will resonate in the comics buyers, you know, universes.
And that's honestly, like, a lot of the credit goes to Dark Horse. You know, they were really open to it, and I think when I, you know, when you walk in and you say, like, here's what I want to do with your Golden Age characters, I want to do a story about racism. I want to do a story about the subtle racism of society, and specifically of comics. And they were fine with it, and they were totally open to it, and, you know, they were very supportive throughout. And I think it's it's one of the strengths of the book, and it's one of the things I'm proudest of.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to spoil it, but towards the end of the issue, there's a certain thing that happens with his handler, who has control over the uniform, and he does something to Eric to kind of, although Eric doesn't realize it, he's kind of showing who's boss here on some level. And when he actually flies in and lands next to President Obama, which I find interesting, and the whole thing is just that
I just thought, you know, there's that, you're talking about subtle racism. There it is right there. And it's not so subtle because, you know, if the lieutenant had actually not turned the power back on, I mean, it could be a very different book moving forward.
Yeah. Well, and that's about, you know, Sharp as a character, he was next in line. Like, that in his mind, like, this is his birthright. Mm. And again, like, that's about, you know, the reaction when you have, you know, when you change the race of a character, that's the reaction people get. You know, even, you know, like when Ultimate Nick Fury first came out, like, that was the reaction. It was like, well, that's not Nick Fury. Well, guess what? That's Nick Fury.
And like, now nobody knows Nick Fury.
You know, so, it's dealing with that kind of, like, again, like, dealing with that kind of stuff is really fun, and it's, you know, while at the same time making what I think is a pretty fun action-y superhero comic, but to get to weave that stuff in is something that's really unique to comics, and it's one of the strengths of the medium, and it's part of why I love working in comics so much. Yeah.
Now, you know, this reminds me very much of how Marvel started out back in, like, its 60s. You know, Spider-Man would get a cold, and Invisible Woman have a bad hair day, although I always thought she had bad hair days. But there were always
when
John
Byrne was drawing her, then it really...
Well, John Byrne, nothing against him, but he used to draw women like ugly men. And so, to me, you're doing things I think Marvel used to do, and we don't see very much of from them, is doing groundbreaking stuff, dealing with issues that are important to us today. And I think, you know, the whole business about the disability, I mean, I cannot imagine what, you know, Eric goes through when suddenly he finds that the belt allows him to actually stand up and walk again. I can't imagine what he's going through. And then he's up there flying. And I thought, man, how can this be for somebody who's been disabled? You know, it's got to be something that's a transforming experience for that.
Well, it's also, and, you know, part of the idea is that it also becomes addictive. You know, so when he has to make decisions about, as he starts to realize the kind of corruption that's filled this organization, and that his predecessor was not the first bad seed to kind of go through it, to go through the Skyman project. You know, it becomes that question of like, well, what do I do if you take away the thing that, you know, not only makes me special, but the thing that fixes me, the thing that gives, you know, lets me, you know, take away the pain for a little bit. And that's something, like, I have chronic pain. I have a neck injury from when I was in my 20s and I was too stupid to ever go to a doctor. So I have a perpetual neck injury. And, you know, and so I spend, you know, I'm in fairly constant agony. And on medication and all that stuff. And so it's one of those things that people don't really think about, but like you get used to it. You get used to being on painkillers, you get used to being on, you know, you get used to being on drugs to take that pain away. So when you take away that crutch, what does that suddenly do? And so what's nice about the book is, you know, even though I'm a white guy from Pittsburgh, like there's a lot in it that I can identify with. And there's, I think, a lot in it that people get. You know, race aside and, you know, the differences aside, like it's really about what it means to make the mantle of who you are, to live in the shadow of who came before you. And, you know, and that's something that as a writer, you know, you get on a book, you got to put on a book that has a long history and you have to do that. You have to find ways to make it your own. So, you know, I try to find a way to take something personal about myself or it, but, you know, something that I wrestle with and put it into the work I'm doing.
Well, it's great. I mean, I didn't realize the personal connection, and I'm really sorry to hear that you're going through that.
Oh, no. But, I've been going through it for so long, I don't even notice anymore.
Well, my mother had, like, tin ear, and she could – every time she was listening to stuff, she said she sounded like – heard like a wee all the time. And so, you know, she'd listen to things, but some parts of her hearing were gone because that muffled up some of those sounds. And so, you know – but after a while, she said, well, you know, I don't even notice it anymore. So it's –
Well, and that's the thing is it's on – for Eric, it's kind of both sides of it. It's that he's just getting used to the fact that he's going to – not have full use of his legs and that he's going to have to deal with, you know, chronic pain when it's kind of miraculously taken away. But again, it's all about the price, like the price that you end up having to pay for that.
Wow. That's good. See, this is all intriguing me all the more. I want to see what's going to happen. You've got four issues, and obviously you've got a storyline that's going to come to a culmination within those four issues. Do you have other stories that you, should this go well, be able to maybe turn it into an ongoing or to do other kind of Skyman stories moving forward?
I would love to. I really like all of what Dark Horse is doing, and I'm a big fan of finding ways to make superhero comics fun and light and you know, everything that drew us into comics. And I look at our responsibility as comic book writers and comic book artists now specifically about how do we get more people to have the same experiences that brought us in. You know, as the industry has kind of shrunk, mm-hmm. I genuinely think that that's one of the reasons, is that there's much less whimsy. There's much less adventure in comics these days.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's obviously some exceptions, but I think if you look at the books that really excel and the books that really capture people's imagination, that is the one thing that kind of unites them. You look at a book like Saga, like it's heavy and it's got big ideas and it's crazy sci-fi, but at its heart, it's like a fun love story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of why it's reverberated with so many people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also one of the things I enjoyed very much about the issue was the art. I thought that Manuel Garcia did a beautiful job of making it easily understood what's going on, because some artists are so great that you can't tell what in the world they're drawing. But his stuff was very clear and very concise, and I thought, you know, it really, I never had to question what was going on. I just think it's very solid, and I'm looking forward to how he's going to handle all four issues with that.
Yeah, he does a great job. Like, I don't want to spoil it, it's hard to talk about, but we get some pretty complex stuff, especially as we get into more of the aerial, you know, more of the aerial combat. And he really excels at that stuff. So I think when you see issues 2 and 3, and especially 4, you're going to see some pretty crazy stuff, and it works beautifully. And it really, the flow of the story is really my favorite part of this book. And, you know, when you're doing guys, you know, fighting, you know, that high up in the sky, I think it gets hard to track action. Like, it's just one of those hard things. And I think the book reads, I think, you know, Manuel did a great job of keeping it clear and concise.
Okay, you've tickled some things in my mind as to what's going to happen in the fourth issue, and I'm not going to ever try to do that, because I don't, as much as the I do stuff's called major spoilers, I don't want to be spoiled, but you just encouraged some thoughts in my head, and I just thought, if it goes that way, I'll be really interested to see how this all develops. Now, I did want to ask one thing about the costume, and that has to do with his cape, because mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like the cape comes out until certain times, like when he's flying. Is that there to help him be able to fly, you know, more exactly, or is that just kind of a design element?
I think it's a little bit of both. It's one of those, you know, it's funny, like as you're developing a story, especially when it's a character with kind of ill-defined powers, you sort of kind of figure out like what works and what doesn't work. So I think, you know, the cape is one of those things that we were using it almost like it's for steering. Like mm-hmm. he has it for drag and for lift. Like it's like a complicated aileron on the back mm-hmm. of his body.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also becomes about just making it look pretty and making it work, you know?
Yeah. You know, the one thing that interests me, too, is that for the longest time, and Joshua, you're a big part of this, is that, you know, the superhero stuff was largely left to the big two, as we like to call them. And other comics companies sort of steered very clear of the superhero genre. But, you know, I'm happy to see the Dark Horse, especially like with Captain Midnight, now with Skyman, and likely, hopefully, some other stuff coming out. I'm so happy that you guys have not left that to the competition, that you haven't just surrendered the whole notion of superheroes, but you're actually taking and making a very strong spin and an upgrade, I think, to the superhero genre. And I'm really happy to see that. And I wanted to say, I don't know who at Dark Horse, you know, is into this, but, you know, you and Mr. Williamson have really done a great job of setting, I think, a platform from which other superhero comics can be launched.
Well, it's really Mike Richardson. You know, Mike has, I think, always envisioned something like this. And, you know, now he's going to kind of execute his vision. And, you know, when we first started, we had a long conversation about, you know, the universe and everything. And that guy has everything worked out in his head. And I know him and Williamson work together very closely. This is, you know, Mike Richardson is the visionary behind it. And so all credit really goes to him for it. He's helped facilitate more important and amazing comic books than almost anybody, you know, this side of Stan Lee. And so that he gets to kind of do this, you know, he gets to do his fun superhero thing, I think is a great reward for him for all of his hard work.
Well, you know, decades and decades of superhero stories have been told, but Captain Midnight and Skyman are very different storytelling techniques with very different characters from what I'm used to, and so that's got me really interested. I just think it's spectacularly done stuff, and I'm just anxious to see the stuff moving forward. I hope that there turns out to be a Dark Horse verse or whatever, and that's got all these interesting and new and unique storytelling done in the superhero genre, because I don't think it's dead yet. I think there's plenty left to tell, but people settle in and do the same old, And I'm glad you guys are stepping out and doing something different and unique. I like that.
Thank you so much.
Now, I couldn't let you go unless I got to talk with you a little bit about The Bunker, which I think is a wonderful. It's been digital, and now it's moving over into print. Do you want to talk a little bit about The Bunker and how that story came to be?
Sure. The Bunker is like my life's blood. It's the thing that really drives me. It's what I work on every day of my life, and it's my passion project with Joe Infernari, who's just a brilliant. He's doing literally everything. I'm really just holding the bag for him. He draws and letters and designs and colors and guy's amazing. So The Bunker started life as a digital comic. We did it through Comixology and then through our own website, and it really did amazing for us. It got a ton of attention, and it's really it's been just a crazy ride. It's a sci-fi drama. We'll go with that. It's a story about a bunch of kids, a bunch of 20-somethings who are graduating from college, and they go for one last kind of weekend together, one big chill weekend. And while they're out, they discover a military-style bunker from the future that contains proof that each of them will contribute to the apocalypse.
Yeah. It's just amazing. I mean, I'm gripped. I've read that, you know, you helped me get a chance to be able to look at the coloring of it, because I think the digital version is mostly black and white, if I remember correctly.
The digital, it's funny. Joe goes crazy, because it's actually not black and white. It's like... I think it's
duotone?
Tritone. It's like tritone.
Oh, tritone.
But
okay.
It's really subtle. And what he did is Joe and I are both into like what is the psychological warfare element of comic storytelling? And so what he did that was really cool is that the way you could tell the difference between the time periods was through this subtle tinting. And you don't notice it, but it actually subconsciously helps you to understand where you are in time and space, which is really important in a time travel book. But yeah, so what we did when we moved over, because we originally did it in sort of the landscape format so that you can read on your tap sideways. But when we were moving over to print, we wanted to make the book, native, print native, so to speak. So we actually, Joe went back in, he took apart every single page. So he literally broke all the pages back into panels. And then we reassembled from the 5 digital chapters, we reassembled them into a new and improved first print issue. And then along with that, he did the coloring process and all that stuff. So like, it's something where like we haven't none of the facts have changed. The book is the same book. The story is the same story, but it's presented in a slightly different way. You know, there's a little bit more to there's some added depth to some of the characters. There's some extensions of some scenes or some stuff that's been deleted. So it's like a special edition, and it's not like a director's cut, because the digital comics are also exactly how we wanted them to be, but it's sort of a hybrid, and it was really about how do we make this match the medium. You know, and the guys at Oni have been fantastic about it. They've really been super supportive, and they love the book, and they have committed themselves 100% to seeing it through and really, you know, getting it into more hands.
Because, you know, when I was reading the book, I couldn't help but feel like, what if I was one of these people? You know, what if I was in this group? You go out and you actually go to plant a time capsule, and you get there and you discover there's one there already.
Yeah.
You know, and all this, it's 180 degrees away from superhero books, but it's so gripping and so enthralling. I got to know what's happening next, which means I got to know. Now, you had the first 5 issues out through Comixology and your website. Are future issues going to come out through Oni only, or are you going to continue to do them digitally?
There's only going to be one format, which will be the print format, but it will be available both from Oni and then on Comixology as well. And we're talking about doing the DRM-free downloads, which we did the first time. But honestly, surprisingly almost, like the sales, I mean, we sold like a 20th of the sales of Comixology when we did it through as a DRM-free sort of, which is surprising because everyone's so pro DRM-free, but it turns out, like, I think convenience still trumps digital rights, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I love it. I have to say, I just was, the moment I got to get into it and I started to go through and I started buying them and I started looking at them, I was like, man, this is unlike anything I've ever read in comic stories. It was personal in the sense that we can relate to these people. And yet, you know, like I said, I see myself in this group. You know, it's like I'm sitting there watching everybody else around me going through all this stuff. So it's a great story. Man,
that's something that I kind of try to pride myself on is a lot of my work, especially the creator-owned stuff. Like I said, I try to draw from my own life. And I think every one of us has had that moment of realizing, like, oh, God, if I could do it all over. If only I knew, if I knew, you know, yesterday what I know today. And so to have them, you know, to have these characters who are going through it in a much more dramatic and, you know, arch way than any of us would actually go through it, it still sort of relates to how we feel, because we understand, like, if you knew that, you know, the girl that you were going to date for the next 5 years was going to ruin your life, would you still date her? Like, would you still, would you give up? You know, there's pleasure in there too, but it's ultimately going to lead to, you know, it's ultimately going to lead to heartbreak. So do you still do it? And that's, you know, you get that within the characters. You know, you have one of our characters is he's a geneticist, and his dream is to feed the world. And the story he finds out is he is going to feed the world, but by feeding the world, he's also going to poison the world.
Wow.
You know, that's his contribution to the apocalypse. And so the question becomes, like, well, so what do? You just walk away? Like, you know that you're capable of this great good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can't just walk away from that. The solution, like, the answer is that, well, I'm going to do it better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take, you know, the risk, because the reward is so great.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that sort of stuff, like, that to me, that's the sort of stuff that we all kind of deal with, you know, in one way or another already in your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, this book has already had me awake at night thinking, well, how about this? I wonder what's going to go this way. You know, how's this all going to work out? So I love a book that does that to me. When I can't get it out of my head, I keep thinking, now what? Now what's going to happen? And that's what The Bunker is to me. I just go like, I don't know what's going to happen next. And I love that. Because I've read for years, and I usually can tell where a book is going. And I can sit there like I watch a TV show and go, oh, yeah, they're going to end up with this, that, and the other. But with your writing, I can never know where you're going. And I think that's one of the best things that's ever in writing, is just being able to fool an experienced writer like me. I think that's terrific.
Well, thank you. It means a lot to me. And that's, you know, again, it's something I kind of pride myself on. I love twisty-turny storytelling, especially when at the end you see why. Especially by the time you get to the end, when you see, like, oh, that's why all these things happen, and that there's an internal logic to it that makes it all kind of hopefully work and sing.
Well, you're likely dangling stuff out there. I don't realize it yet, but you're already setting up where we're going. And when I go back and say, oh, that's why that happened, that kind of stuff. I love that kind of thing. I just think that's great. So I think The Bunker is a terrific book. I can't wait for the issue to come out. I'm going to have good copies of it to keep in my little library, because I think it's wonderful stuff.
It's in previews right now. You need to pre-order, because I pre-order creator-owned comics. They never show up. So make sure you tell your local retailer. If you go to onipress.com, you can find out all the order info and everything.
Coolness. All right. Well, all this is good stuff. Do you have any other projects coming that we should be aware of?
I'm finishing up Ultimates Cataclysm, wherein Brian Bendis and I are destroying the Ultimate Universe. depending on, I don't know when this is going to come out, but depending on that, there's going to be a couple more Marvel projects announced in the next couple weeks that I'm working on. And what else am I working on? And then I got another creator-owned book that's also going to be from Oni Press that'll get announced later this year. And that's kind of it. I'm really focused on, you know, The Bunker. The Bunker takes a huge amount of my time, because it's incredibly difficult to write. Like, it is the hardest and slowest book I've ever written. Because it is, like, everything I do now has to be paid off and has to have some sort of consequence down the road. And so it's a Sisyphean task to kind of manage it all. And I'm really lucky that I have Joe and then I have Robin and James at Oni, who editorially are making sure that what I'm writing actually makes sense.
Do you like working for the different companies at the same time? I mean, does that give you more freedom to do that? Because you're working for Oni and you're working for Dark Horse and Marvel at the same time. Does that fit your creativity better than, say, working with one company in one universe all the time?
I don't know. I mean, there's benefits, but I'm very practical. And I've been doing this long enough that I know that any of it can go away at any one time. And so you kind of have to. So part of me is like a paranoia there. I like to have my finger in as many pies as possible, so that when people start taking those pies away, I have a couple more left. This is really just about how much I like pie. That's really what it comes down to.
Okay, because as a buyer, I just, the only thing that makes it a little tougher for me, because I have to go out and seek your name out a little harder. But that, you know, that's perfectly fine, because it's worth the effort to find out the stuff that you're creating, because it's always going to be a good payoff. So I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing, you know, for fans or people who like what they see, the best thing is to follow me on Twitter, because I'm just the kind of guy where I have a wanderlust. I like being able to work on my creator own one day and a superhero book the next day, and, you know, a horror book the next day. And I've worked in video games. I've worked in TV a bit. I've worked in film. Like, I've worked all over the place. And I like having the variety, because I get bored really easily. And I like having different challenges. Part of the thing with comics, it doesn't pay great. So there's lots of challenges that you get to work with, whether it's restrictions or, like, I've done lots of, you do lots of work for the big two, and you get lots of, like, we want you to do a story about this. The best examples, I did a Spider-Man story. And they were like, "Why don't you do Spider-Man story? But you can't use any villains. You can't use the Daily Bugle. You can't use this was probably when Spidey, when like Dan Slott was just starting his runs. So they were kind of still building what the book was going to be. So it was like, you can't use Mary Jane. You can't use any of his girlfriends. You can't use Aunt May. And it was literally like, so you why don't you do a Spider-Man story where the only thing you have is Spider-Man?" And it's actually like it's funny when you realize, like, oh, that's right. Like, this is a great character, and I don't need all the artifice around him. I don't need all the other stuff, because he works. Like, he works so well. And it's, like I said, it's a fun challenge that you get to do.
I say this often to people. I'm creeped out by the current Superior Spider-Man. You've got this old guy in a young guy's body, and he's making passes at Mary Jane and stuff, and that creeps me out. I must be the only one that feels that way.
No, I think that's part of what makes that stuff work. Dan's a genius. That guy's amazing. He's so damn talented. It's really frustrating. It's really hard for the rest to try and keep up with that guy.
Well, you do very well on your own, too. I love all the stuff that you're doing, and I hope you have a lot of success going forward, because I want to read more of the stories you want to tell. So, man, all the best going forward, and keep up with Skyman and make things work. I just think it's terrific.
Well, cool. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. And like I said, people can follow me. I'm on Twitter at Josh Fialka. So if you want to see more of what I'm doing, come on by and follow me.
Examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com. This week, there are two important news items I feel you need to know about.
Batman!
Yes, that's the theme from the 1960s Batman show, starring Adam West and Burt Ward as the dynamic duo, which they used to be called. And this year we've come to find out that Warner Brothers Entertainment will be releasing the complete series in a box set. How about that? It's been years and years and years. There's been a big fight over who has the rights to release it, and so we're going to finally get to see those come out. Now, the movie had come out in the past, but not the series that ran from 1966 to 1968. Of course, Adam West became a well-known name, still a name that people know from his voice work on things like Family Guy and other places. But it's amazing to see. We're going to get to see Yvonne Craig even as Batgirl in the third and final season. There were great villains. Of course, the Joker, Cesar Romero, the Penguin, Burgess Meredith, the Riddler, who was played by Frank Gorshin, and the three different ladies who got to wear the Catwoman outfit. And that included Lee Merriweather in the film, Julie Newmar first in the series, and Eartha Kitt. And, of course, there were a lot of other celebrities who got to be in the show because it was a big deal back then. The whole idea of camp was brought about by the show. You had Otto Preminger as Mr. Freeze. You had Milton Berle as Louis the Lilac. Vincent Price played Egghead. And Liberace was Chandel and his twin brother Harry at the same time. And then we also had Zsa Zsa Gabor playing Minerva. So that kind of gives you an idea how popular it was back in those days, if any of you younger folks have any idea who those people are. But it was announced recently by Conan O'Brien, and he was pictured in a Batmobile from that era, and he had this funny saying that the seat smells like Adam West, who, of course, sat in that seat for many years. So it's a wonderful thing. I think people are going to finally get it. We don't know an exact date, but it will be coming out shortly because there's lots of money to be made in that. So enjoy your Batman. And the other piece of news is something I didn't realize until just recently. There is an animated movie called JLA Adventures Trapped in Time that's an original animated movie that's coming to Target, and it should arrive on January the 21st. I don't know about this. I never heard of it. It's actually been in the works for a while, and Target actually has exclusive Justice League merchandise. So they'll be the only retailer you can go to get this direct-to-DVD animated feature. The story, which also appears to feature at least two members of the Legion of Superheroes, as well as Batman's sidekick Robin, will be directed by Giancarlo Volpe, who also directed Green Lantern, the animated series, which I liked. And not only that, it's going to have Frederick Wiedemann, who provided the score for Green Lantern, the animated series as well. So I think it's going to be well worth the buying. It's going to have a 52-minute runtime and features the design work by Linnell Forstall from DC Nation. It includes a Justice League lineup that is pretty traditional and with a few additions, and also Karate Kid's in there too, speaking of the Legion. The voice cast includes Greg DeLeslie, Dante Bosco, Jack DeSena. Now, Diedrich Bader, who did the voice of Batman in Batman the Brave and the Bold, so I assume he's doing Batman, is in there, as well as Jason Spezak. And I'm sure I butchered a whole bunch of those. But if you want to get that on the 21st, it'll be out in Target. And they don't know whether Cyborg's going to be in it. It's a JLA branding, much like when Grant Morrison was writing JLA instead of Justice League. So we'll see what goes on with that. But I just thought people should know about this, because I didn't know about it either. So JLA Adventures Trapped in Time, with also the Legion characters in there, is a big draw. So be sure to pick that up. And that's the news for this week. And that's it for this episode. Be back next week when we'll have more interviews, news, and other items. But until then, keep reading your comics.